Paul Tonko, you know, in the past, people's eyes may glaze over when they hear about the Export-Import Bank, but this is very important, and what's so interesting to me about it is it breaks the paradigm. In other words, you got Republicans for it, you got Democrats for it. It would pass overwhelmingly in the House if it were brought up and everybody was allowed to vote, but there's a branch of sort of, you know, very conservative Republicans.
I think we would say extreme thinking. I think it's beyond conservative as a label.
So the regular Republicans, you know, the sort of Rockefeller types and a little bit more to the right, are all for this. It encourages American business. It brings business here. It brings business there. And yet the extreme, as you put it, won't let it happen. What? Based on the fact that they say this is welfare, this is corporate welfare.
Right. They see it as quasi-governmental, but they're ignoring the facts. I believe in the last annual measurement, it might be 2013, the fund, the Export-Import Bank, offered taxpayer relief in terms of deficit reduction by some $675 million. And that's a sizable bit of deficit reduction. And also in that annual report on export-import, they were generating some 164,000 jobs through the bolstering of enhanced exporting for these manufacturing groups. So basically, it speaks to the mantra of many in the House, including Republicans, who say, cut the deficit and grow jobs. It's exactly what the Export-Import Bank does. And I believe in their passion to undo this quasi-governmental entity, which has been around for decades now, so important that 60-some nations have created over 80 export-import banks around the international scene. So it's a model that I think is very effective and very helpful in stretching the dollars of investment so that more exporting can be the outcome for manufacturing. So while we're sitting here playing this tug of war over the Export-Import Bank, others have their banks up and running. Ours dates back to June, when it was technically shut down. They're still continuing some of those contracts, but no new ones were being executed.
Now, part of the problem is an exercise in democracy, small d, is if you walked out in front of this studio where we're talking right now and asked the first 100 people, what is the Export-Import Bank? They would have no idea. And therefore, how do you have
it doesn't have
the
an
impetus?
Audience.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I think it again is the part, it's a public information exchange. It's part of the assignment to any of my colleagues and myself. It's not important only to just vote on something, but to explain to your constituents what this tool in the toolkit is all about. And basically, the Export-Import Bank reduces the risk on investment for them to enhance their export line. Oftentimes, they get a better contract, a less expensive cost for money that they need for expansion. And it's also, I think one of the strong points is it serves as a government creditor. So a number of these contracts, especially large looming contracts with industries, require the reinforcement of a creditor, and it in print in the contract bid requires a government creditor. So people reach to the Export-Import Bank, yes, for dollars that will relieve their efforts in growing the export line, but it's also a way of establishing a sound creditor with a good track record.
So here you have this combination of moderate Republicans who really do stand for American business and have defended business in the past. You have Democrats, including some very liberal Democrats who were, like yourself, who were in favor of it. When you add it up, it's a clear majority in the House of Representatives. But as my friend Ian Pickett was just saying to me the other day, why don't the Democrats and the Republicans get together and vote together? And that'll be the end of that. Does it have something to do with something called the Hastert rule?
Well, basically what you have is the control of the House by Republicans that have within their conference, within their caucus, the majority caucus, a group of 40, 50, sometimes 60, who are the tail wagging the dog, who will not allow for certain items to go forward. And so the impact here is that it has not been released from committee to come to the floor.
Well, wait a second. Aren't the people in the committee? Wouldn't they say, let's release it and let the Democrats vote for it and we'll vote for it too? How come they won't allow that?
Well, because leadership is trying to respond to the caucus at large, the majority caucus at large. And the chair of the committee from the state of Texas, along with a number of extreme thinkers, do not want this concept to come to the floor. And I think they know that if it came to the floor, it would probably have enough votes because of a great majority of Democrats, that an overwhelming support of Democrats on the measure. So it is held from the process and it's buried in committee, all while some casualties are beginning to occur in this country, where jobs are being shipped from this country over to a participant export-import bank. Let me just point out that our district, the 20th Congressional District, is the first in the country to experience the consequences of the export-import bank failure.
And how did that happen?
Well, GE was looking for this government creditor, because that was part of the contract that they had bid into and had the winning bid. And to comply with the contract, they had to find this creditor. France offered, because their export-import bank is up and running. And so France said, look, come to us. We'll participate with you with the export-import bank. And that's the story. So I believe over 500 jobs nationwide that are under the umbrella of GE will be shipped to France. French workers will be doing those jobs, and over 200 are placed here in the 20th district.
Well, what I don't get is the GE takes its marbles and goes to Atlanta. Why Atlanta over, Schenectady?
Well, I don't know all of the company decision-making, but there's everything from economic issues to social issues. We have to combat that here in the Northeast with, I think, good partnerships with the communities that provide jobs. And, I don't know the calculus on their thinking. I do know that, wherever we can provide relief and participate with the company, we should, because there are thousands of jobs at risk that are good-paying, sound-paying jobs.
Wow. Let me ask you this. Maybe we'll continue it the next time we speak, but there was a Democratic debate. The New York Times and CNN made it quite plain that Hillary had won the debate. I didn't think so, and I took on my colleagues on our roundtable program on that very issue. I know you've been supporting Hillary, but I wonder where you came down on that.
Well, I think that, number one, I think that that debate was so much more substantive than what we've seen from the other side.
Absolutely.
I mean, absolute stark difference. And I think at least three of them, Governor O'Malley, and Senator Clinton, Secretary Clinton, and Senator Sanders, all had strengths in that debate. And I think that, putting the party expression out there ahead of their candidacy, as they did oftentimes, the Democrats are standing for some of those solutions that this country right now very gravely requires. And I think many of them, the three of them at least, spoke to the elements of the solutions that we should be using. And I think they all scored big points with the audience.
Really? I heard you say three of them. I heard Bernie Sanders, who I thought was one of them, Hillary Clinton, who was the other one, and the third one was?
I think Governor O'Malley, in a sense, had, especially in his closing statement, incorporated the principles of the party, which speak to a strengthening of the middle-income community, making certain that, we're there for working families, climate change addressing, and a number of the items that I think come under the tutelage of social economic justice.
Well, we're out of time, but I wanted to ask you one thing. This is only going to require a yes or a no. Do you think Biden is coming into this race?
I would guess no.
Paul Tocco, man of few words when he needs to have few words. We thank you for being here with us. And we come back again. Let's talk about lots of things.